You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Today's conversation is one of those crossroads we all encounter at some point in our financial journey. You finally get a little extra money, maybe a bonus or tax refund. Maybe you've just been really disciplined. And then the internal tug of war begins. Should I use this money to pay off debts? Or should I invest it? Or worse, should I take this cash and YOLO it into a soft life weekend I will never forget? It's the question that lives in every budget spreadsheet and bank notification, and one that forces us to confront our habits, our mindset, and our long-term vision. Because here's the truth, debt is loud. It demands to be settled. Investing, on the other hand, is quieter. But just as urgent, it requires you to think ahead, plant seeds, and trust the future. And somewhere in the middle of that tension is you, trying to make the wisest choice with the money you have. Today, we're not just tackling this decision, we're demystifying it. And to do that, we've brought in a woman who is the very definition of financial clarity and intentionality. She is not only fluent in the language of money, but she is gifted in decoding it for the rest of us. Tsungai Masendeke is a certified financial planner, a behavioral finance expert, and the founder of Moms and Money, a platform that's transforming how families, especially women-led households, think about and interact with wealth. She's a powerhouse, let me tell you. She's walked the corporate finance corridors, mastered financial literacy education, and is now on a mission to rewrite the money narrative for millions across Africa and beyond. Her work sits at the intersection of numbers and narratives, and today she's going to help us untangle one of the biggest financial dilemmas of our time. Should I pay off my debt or should I invest it? So buckle in. This is not going to be a surface level conversation. We're going deep into the psyche, the strategy, and the soul of your money. Tsungai, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And the crowd goes wild. What an introduction. Thank you.
I want us to begin where most people skip. I want us to go to the roots. Because people are trying to fix their money, right? But they haven't stopped to ask where their financial behaviors come from. Are you okay if we go down there?
Let's go, girl.
Let's go. When someone gets unexpected money, whether it's 5,000 or 50,000, some spend, some invest, and some freeze. What do our instinctive money choices tell us about ourselves?
They tell us a lot.
Okay.
So there are some people, when they come into money, have what we call the sudden wealth syndrome.
Okay.
And what that does is it uncovers that part of you that has been laying low because there was lack. Right?
Yeah.
So if you had visions or dreams of being extravagant, all of a sudden, when you actually come into money, that becomes your reality.
Yes. I mean, I've got the 50K. What you mean?
Exactly. Because now it's an opportunity for you to actualize your vision, your dream, your fantasies.
Yes.
But the same goes for an individual who has got a dream to start a business, who's got a vision to actually acquire an asset. If they come into money because they want to follow their dream, they want to follow their vision, they actually then put it into action.
Yeah.
So what you're spending your time dreaming about, envisioning, just gets aided, or money breathes life into it.
Oh.
So if you see those people that end up squandering, you know what they're doing in their dream cupboard. If you see those people that buy assets when they get into money, you know exactly what they're doing also in their dream cupboard.
Oh, man. So money is paparazzi. It exposes you.
It exposes you. It only brings out that which was laying low.
Yeah. Now this got me thinking about what some common emotional triggers or beliefs you may have possibly seen people carry when it comes to their money. In the work that you've done, what does this look like?
So there are different types of mindsets.
Okay.
But I would summarize them in two key categories,
mm-hmm.
an abundance mindset and a poverty mindset.
Yeah.
So those that actually have a poverty mindset don't have the ability to regenerate wealth when they come into it.
Mm-hmm.
Those with an abundance mindset, on the other hand, are always looking for innovative, creative ways to make their resources or money multiply.
Yeah.
And I always say, if you don't increase your money capacity, either through learning, through coaching, through interaction with other able-bodied individuals that understand the capability of managing money, you always revert to your default. Now, let me give you an example.
Please do.
If you've got a 250 milliliter cup, the maximum it can contain is 250 milliliters.
Yes.
No matter how much liquid you pour into it, 5 liters, 10 liters, 1 liter,
yeah,
it will always gravitate back to its 250 milliliter capacity.
Yeah.
Take, on the other hand, a 50 liter tub or a bucket. If you put in your water in there, it will keep on taking on more up until it reaches its 50 liter capacity. All right. Then if you take a JoJo tank, which is maybe 150 liters or 300 liters, as long as you keep filling it, it will have capacity to store it.
For sure.
Right. But up until it reaches the 300 liter mark,
it
still has capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of us have got 250 milliliter capacity of managing money.
Ooh.
So no matter how much money you get come into, you will always spend the excess up until you are left with the right size for you that is not overwhelming for you.
Okay.
All right. And then if you're a 300 liter capacity type of person, guess what? Resources will keep on coming, keep on coming, keep on coming, because now you've learned to be such a great steward of those resources. So at the end of the day, whether or not you have a poverty mindset, that 250 milliliter, or the abundance mindset, the 300 liter tank, you'll find yourself somewhere in between there. But it's important that you continuously renew your mind. You go for coaching. You read literature. You spend around people that are successful so that you keep on increasing your capacity from a 250 milliliter to a 1 liter to a 10 liter to a 300 liter one day.
You know, and when we started, you mentioned that some of the mindsets we have around money are often shaped by what we saw or experienced growing up, or rather what we didn't see or experience growing up. And I wonder, how did your own upbringing influence your relationship with money? And I'm asking about, and I'm putting it in this term, relationship with money, because I think not everybody thinks about how they use their money only being a manifestation of the relationship they actually have with money. And we'll get to talking about how to heal that relationship. But what was your experience? How did your upbringing influence what your relationship is with money, or was back then at some point?
So I think every person has a unique story.
Yeah.
And how you grew up being conscientized or conditioned about money definitely does impact how you end up managing money. So if you grew up in a household where things were tough, things were difficult, you end up being either a serial hoarder,
this is true,
stingy, or the extremist of that, which is spendthrift, or someone who's very lackadaisical with money. Because you've grown up in a place where there was lack. Now that you've got the capability or capacity, you actually want to make up for lost time, if I may put it that way. So your experiences with money definitely impact how you then start making decisions about money. If you grew up in a healthy household where people talked about money and they actually budgeted, you will take those same habits into your own lifetime. And you can actually pass those behaviors to your children as well.
So and it's then it very becomes important. A generational thing.
Yeah, it becomes generational. So people talk about generational poverty.
Yeah.
There's also generational wealth.
Yes.
You know, it just depends how willing you are to transform the mind and follow it with the right kind of actions that ensure that you become a great steward of the resources you get access to.
Yeah. And how do we begin to heal our relationship with money, especially when it feels like we've just made too many mistakes?
So I think this is a great launch pad into our conversation.
Yeah.
Do you pay off debt?
Yes.
Or do you actually invest?
Yes.
And there's no straight line answer.
Mm.
Because again, for each person, it will depend.
It
but
will.
What I'll do today is just help you with some of the principles that will help you have a successful wealth creation journey. So to begin with, I always say put together a debt schedule.
Okay.
Which is a list of all your debts, the credit cards from the different banks, personal loans from the different lending institutions. If you've got bonds, put them down there. If you've got a mortgage or if you've got motor vehicle loan, you put that there. So you list every single one of your debts.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you put the repayment amount. Okay. And then you put the interest rates you're paying for each and every one of them.
Okay.
A lot of people get caught out in thinking, oh, let me pay off my bond.
Yeah.
But remember, your bond is a secured loan.
Yes.
Meaning there is security. There's an asset backing it. And because there's an asset that the bank can potentially repossess if you fail to pay, they actually give you a lower interest rate. Because there's some certainty that they can recover if you're unable to pay off that debt.
Yeah.
Whereas with your personal loan, your store loan, that is an unsecured loan. There's nothing to protect the bank, nothing for them to fall back on if you default. So for the higher risk they're taking on that type of debt, they charge you a higher amount of interest rate.
Yeah.
You're going to write down the interest rates for each and every one of the debts, and then you're going to pay, also write down the repayment amounts. So you end up seeing that, yes, your bond, you're paying a lot of money each month, but the interest rate is highly likely to be the least because it's got security behind it. It's got an asset behind it. Your personal loan, on the other hand, all right, or even your store loans, those are the biggest culprits. They'll have a high interest rate and sometimes a very small repayment amount. So you walk around thinking, I need to kill the bond, instead of I need to kill the store loan. Because your store loan is what's actually charging you the most based on interest. All right. Now, once you've done your credit schedule, then you can then start looking at options for investing. All right. What are the different investment options out there I can go into? And what are the rates of return I can also get from them?
Yeah.
And you'll quickly realize that maybe 10 out of 10 times, nothing will be able to give you the kind of return that paying off your personal loan, as an example, would be able to give you. So it then becomes important to assess, which debts do I need to pay off? Because I can never compete with the rate of return that I'm able to actually get from a particular investment. So as an example, I come into contact with an investment that gives me 9%. My personal loan is charging me 26%. I'd rather save on the 26%, i.e. me paying someone interest, compared to me receiving interest of only 9%. So already you're getting a great return for that one rand by paying off your debt compared to investing it. All right. So it's important that you look at it on a case-by-case basis, based on what debt you have relative to the kind of investments you have access to. It's highly likely that you'll need to pay off the unsecured debt first before you consider investing. But a caveat I'm actually going to throw in there is,
curveball.
What normally happens is people get into debt because of a need to satisfy instant gratification. They want it and they want it now. But the only way you can change behavior, change that mindset that got you into this mess, is to start investing small amounts but consistently. And
okay.
a great way to start would be maybe with an emergency fund or a rainy day fund, because it just helps transition the mentality into delayed gratification. So you can actually start saving or investing whilst also trying to kill debt quite aggressively. And really, these things, these two must work in tandem, because the one is getting you to a point where you're going to become debt-free, whilst the other one helps you so that you don't fall back into that same debt if you find yourself in a crisis.
This is so interesting. And I'm so sorry to interject, because when I started really learning about personal finance, I came across the baby steps, the 7 baby steps by Dave Ramsey, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure you are very much aware of them. And he says to kill debt. I think the verse he uses is the one in Proverbs that says, like a gazelle, something like that, but to really tackle your debt like a gazelle and then think about investing. So to hear you talk about they can be done in tandem is actually so refreshing. And I think it is because when we think about paying off debt, it's not a nice feeling, right? It's like, oh, my money is going to the thing that I've long since enjoyed. I can't even remember the experience anymore. So it's not a nice feeling to part with money that way. But if we are doing it as well as or together with putting money aside for our future, it's like there's that, I don't want to say trade-off, but like there's that balance that you get, because it's at least I'm rewarding my future self, even though I'm paying for the mistakes, or maybe not even mistakes, because some debt is necessary, but for the decisions of the past. So to hear you put it that way is actually very refreshing.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people go into debt because of unforeseen circumstances, expenses, things like death, someone falling sick,
yeah.
a need for medication, a need for money for hospitalization, treatment, retrenchment, etc. So the idea is, how do I become better prepared
yes.
for these things so that I don't have to go back to debt
yeah.
to save me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So as much as yes, the rainy day fund might not give you as much of a return as the interest you're saving on your personal loan.
It covers
it's an important element of your financial plan you need to introduce, because it will give you an alternative fallback so that you don't keep on going back to debt.
That's so good. Yeah. And when people, this sounds easy, right? It sounds so easy. I mean, it sounds logical. This is what you need to do. This is how you go about it. But I wonder, from what you've seen and in your experience, when people are then, having a tussle with this question, do I invest, do I save, or pay off debt? What usually drives this question in people's lives? Is it anxiety? Is it opportunity? Or is it just plain confusion?
Most cases, it's just confusion.
Oh, okay.
Lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
Which is why you need experts like myself, a certified financial planner, to help you decipher what will work best in your particular circumstance.
Mm.
I mean, I have come across people that have got money sitting in money market accounts or like 32-day accounts.
Yeah.
And then you ask them, what interest are you earning on this?
Yeah.
And it's... 4, 5, 6%, and yet they've got a personal loan that is driving them crazy, that is charging them 22%. In that specific instance, it's a no-brainer for me. You need to kill the debt.
Yeah.
And then that 2,000, 3,000 you are using to pay off your credit card, you're using to pay off the personal loan, start your rainy day fund. You're no longer paying Peter.
Yeah.
And you're making sure that you can actually create a nest egg that you can enjoy in your future.
Yeah. And you know, since we are talking about people lacking knowledge, I do want to get us into some, well, you did tell us to have that schedule, right? But what are some of the ways, or maybe even some of the vehicles, that people can consider to invest? Because when this conversation is had, it can get very intimidating. People think stocks, what? Bonds. It gets very confusing, like you said, and quite intimidating. So I really want to make this a relatable thing to do, because investing is not above anybody. People can start with as little money as they have, but I don't think people are aware of the vehicles available to them to invest. So if you can just share with us those vehicles that are available, so that people can start thinking about where to throw their 100 rands or their 3,000 rands that they have lying around.
Sure. So the easiest vehicles you can use to invest are either a unit trust, also known as a collective investment scheme, or an exchange traded fund.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the simplest things you can consider to start your investment journey.
Got it.
And before you invest, there are three key principles you must be aware of.
Okay.
The first one: how much risk do you want to take?
Mm.
Are you risk-loving or are you risk-averse?
Yeah.
Are you comfortable losing some of your capital, or you just want to protect it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you are comfortable losing some of it, then you're willing to take on risk.
For sure.
But if you're not willing to lose any of your capital, then you're more likely risk-averse.
Mm.
And obviously, there can be some people that are in the middle. So
okay.
Understand your risk appetite.
Yeah.
Second of all, understand how long do you want to invest for?
Mm.
A short-term investment is considered under 24 months. 3 to 7 years is considered medium term. And then 7 years onwards is considered long term.
Mm.
So how long do you want to invest for?
Yeah.
How long are you prepared to keep the money in the markets for?
Mm.
Right. So your risk appetite, the investment horizon or investment term, as we call it.
Mm.
And then the third thing that probably boggles a lot of people is return expectations.
Mm.
You need to be realistic about the returns you can expect depending on how long you want to invest and how much risk you want to take.
Okay.
We have a general principle that we say, if you take on low risk, you must be prepared to earn low returns.
Oh, low risk, low return.
If you take on high risk, you must be prepared then to also receive high return.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's very important to actually understand these simple principles because they will help you avoid making bad investment decisions.
Mm.
Like Ponzi's, because in a Ponzi, you are promised high returns, very little risk.
Yes.
And that is an immediate red flag.
Uh-huh. We've lost you there, Tungai.
I'm here.
Okay. Okay. So,
it's very key.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
To understand the dynamics of investing so that you can then make the right decision in terms of what would best suit you.
Got it. And what are some non-traditional investment vehicles that people can look into getting into? The stuff that's not really spoken about much when investment is a topic.
So the wildest I can think of right now is hedge funds.
Okay. And what makes it wild?
Because they use unconventional strategies.
Okay.
They will take long and short strategies. They will use derivatives, etc. And for the sake of people's sanity on this platform at this hour, I'll just say stick to the basics today.
Got you. What are your thoughts on property investing in business, and things of that nature?
Same principle we talked about.
Yeah.
It's an investment.
Yeah.
So you must understand what is your risk appetite.
Mm.
You must understand how long you're prepared to invest for and what your return expectations are.
Mm.
Property tends to be quite a risky type of investment that requires a long-term horizon.
Sure.
So you must then prepare yourself appropriately for that type of investment.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of any sort of property, it can either be residential, it can be commercial.
Yeah.
But again, you must be in it for the long haul.
Mm.
You must be prepared to invest for a long period of time for you to actually enjoy the benefits of having a property investment. And remember, sometimes it might not even be in your lifetime that you enjoyed the profitability.
Oof.
It might be in the next generation or your grandchildren that will enjoy it. And that's the whole point of using other asset types to create that generational wealth.
I've heard you talk about how time is one of the most powerful forces in investing. How do we weigh that against the cost of delaying debt repayment?
So when you talk of investing, there's a very powerful phenomenon called compound interest.
Yeah.
So the same way that compound interest works in terms of helping you accumulate your wealth, compound interest also helps to balloon your debt.
Oof.
That's why it becomes important to make sure that you try and kill your debt as much as possible.
Yeah.
Most debt uses what you call...
Or at the very least, keep up with your debts. Yeah.
Yeah. Because compound interest is about money making more money.
Mm.
But on the other hand, with debt, we talk about amortization, meaning every 100 rand you pay kills off a small part of your debt. And pays a big part of the interest.
Mm.
So remember, interest is compounding, even on your debt.
Mm.
The question is, are you the one paying that interest or you're being paid the interest?
Ooh, yes.
There's always going to be an opportunity cost. That's why for me, getting rid of that consumptive debt, that debt that's not part of a mortgage, or your school education loan, or a vehicle you've used for Uber, that debt must go because it's not serving you any benefit in your life except making you poorer.
I'd love for us to humanize the theory, right? So I've prepared like three scenario style questions so that we can maybe help somebody like practically. Okay. So let's say someone earns 20,000 rand a month. They have 10,000 rand in credit card debt, but they also want to invest in that first ETF that you spoke about. What could be a smart next step for this person?
Well, they must call a friend. Dial my number, please, because I need to understand your full circumstances. And I think it goes back to the principles I mentioned.
Yeah.
What's the interest rate on your credit card? What's the rate of return on your ETF? You need to weigh which one would give you a better return on every 100 rand you put. Yes, because if your credit card is at 14%, but you can get into an investment that's giving you 20%, then yes, it makes sense to go into the investment because you'll have a net return of 6%.
Yes. Got it. Another person just received 15,000 rand from a bonus. They have student loans, but also no emergency fund. How should they split that money?
Great question.
Uh-huh.
So, I normally say, based on my Penta rule, where 50% of your income must go to your living expenses, 10% to long-term investing, 10% to medium-term investing, 10% to short-term saving, and then the last 10% can actually go to YOLO slash fund fund.
Yes.
Slash black tax fund, etc. The last 10% can also be used to then pay off debt. So that's one quick, simple rule you can use for yourself to help allocate the money to different needs. So in this context, you take 10%, use it to pay off debt, and the other 10% you can put it into your short-term slash emergency fund.
This is it's so interesting to hear you say this, because when I heard you explain or break down that those figures, right? So in my mind, I'm like, oh, this makes sense for your budget, your daily or monthly living, way of living. But you're even using the principle for those lump sums, like your bonus and I guess the cash that just gets injected sporadically. That's quite interesting.
Yeah, because I think it's important to realize that if you come into large sums of money, you must have a strategy for it.
Yeah.
Okay. It can't just be willy-nilly, thumbsuck, oh yeah, let's do this and this and this. Use a well thought out principle, the Pentaru as I call it, and will actually help you still enjoy life whilst preparing for the future.
Yeah. And the last question I have around this is, what are small wins people can aim for each month that help them feel momentum, even if they can't do big things just yet?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll sum it off as find an additional stream of income for yourself.
Okay.
Right? Multiple streams of income are a lifesaver, especially where you feel you're so deep in debt, but you can't actually dig yourself out of that hole because there's no disposable income. Find something that you can do. There are platforms that you can go onto where you can get gigs.
Yeah.
And then you start chipping away at the debt from the additional income that you actually make.
Yeah.
If you are great with your hands, find something that you can do that you can monetize so that again, you make additional streams of income. So yeah, find those platforms online that allow you to exchange your time for money.
Yeah.
It can be things like copywriting. It can be stuff like data capture. It can be advanced stuff like preparing models, just depending on the level of your aptitude.
Yeah.
There are different things you can do, but important is don't just sit and soak and feel the debt is going to go away, because it's not going anywhere until you take action and do something about it.
Not at all. And you know, it can even be small as, and I was thinking about this for myself earlier, that I've got so much furniture just sitting in the garage from my previous place. And I'm just like, why don't I sell all the stuff, because I don't use them. I haven't been using these things for like 5-6 months. And I'm thinking it can chip away at some really significant debt if I just sold these things and paid the debt. And I think people can think like that also about what they have, not so much what they do, because that is more sustainable, but also what they have and how that can make an indelible mark in their finances.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
Start with what you have and grow. But the important thing I always say is just start.
Just start.
The details will figure themselves out once you start.
Oh, this is so true. Now, Tsungai, money management often feels like a crash diet. We start strong. After some time, we just fall off. How can people build sustainable financial habits?
Like you said, it's about the consistency.
Yes.
If you start brushing your teeth today and you don't brush your teeth for the next 365 days, what's going to happen?
Oh.
Okay?
Yeah.
The cavities are going to find you.
Yeah.
All right? Bad breath is going to be your cousin from another mother. All right?
Yeah.
So it's important that when you actually implement these good financial habits, you also ensure you are consistent about them. If you brush your teeth every day for 365 days, guess what? You'll have pearly whites.
Yes.
Same thing if you're consistent about doing your money management or your budget every single month, you do get better at it.
True.
You do become more proficient at it. But like we said, just start and maintain the consistency, making sure that every month you review, how did I perform last month? What did I do well at? What can I improve on so that you keep on developing your financial muscle?
Yeah. You know, I know people who are in their 40s, their 50s or 60s even, that just feel like, oh, it's too late. Can you paint a picture of what's possible for them if they start and they are consistent?
Remember that beautiful friend we talked about called compounding?
Yes.
In the context of investing, if you start and you keep your investment for at least 13 years, that's where you actually start seeing the beauty of compounding.
Oh, 13
so
sounds
starting.
Good. 13 sounds good for somebody in their 50s.
Yes,
yeah.
Because it's before retirement that you start to enjoy that. But don't wait until it's too late, because there is definitely a cost of delay. And I feel when you actually start anything, you gain momentum.
This
you become better at it.
This is true.
So even if it's money management, start. If it's paying your debt, start. If it's investing, start. Because starting gives you the momentum. It gives you those early results that keep you encouraged, that keep you motivated, so that you keep on track to achieve your goals.
Yeah.
I think one other thing I'd also say that will help you stay on track is having specific goals that you want to achieve.
Okay.
And you can reach out to a person like myself to help put clarity into the goals, put a plan behind the goal. Because a lot of people have got great intentions, but they have no action.
Yeah.
They have no plan to back those great intentions.
Oh,
so what we do as certified financial planners is you come with your big dream, you come with your big goal, you break it down into small achievable targets so that again, at certain milestones, you reward yourself. Upon achieving certain aspects of the goal, you put in there something that motivates you so that you can keep going. Because we believe that you can eat an elephant one bite at a time.
Yes.
And what better partner to have to help you chew properly?
I love that you brought yourself into this conversation, because I don't mind if you answer this next question as a sales pitch. How do you help clients dream again, especially those who've only ever budgeted to survive?
Breathing into one's dreams is what I do for a living.
Let's go.
There is nothing I find pleasure and delight in than to see my clients tick off those lifelong goals sooner than they thought was achievable.
Yes.
And it is possible, but you need the structure, you need the accountability, which is why I said a lot of people have got great intentions, but they don't have a plan, they don't have a strategy. And that's where we come in to help you with that commitment, to help you with that plan, to help be an accountability partner so that you stay on course. It's so amazing how in sports, right?
Yeah.
A soccer star will have a coach.
Yes.
All right. A tennis star will have a coach.
For sure.
But managing our money is the one thing we think we can just wing.
It's my money.
It's your money, but you need to get coached,
this
girl.
This is true.
Because you're probably at a 20% capacity of what that money can do for you.
Yeah.
But when you bring in an expert like myself, we can elevate that potential to 80%. So get yourself a guy.
Yeah.
And start rolling in the dough.
Before I continue, I love that. Before I continue to my other questions, how do we get a hold of you? How do we have you in our corner as the one who breathes life into our dreams? Especially the ones that we chuffed away because life happened.
So I'm contactable on WhatsApp, on the normal calls, on 073-519-2358. My number again, 073-519-2358. Or they can reach out to me on email, sungai.masendeke@liblink.co.za.
Love it. Let's wrap this up with three things that I actually want to hear from you. I'm very curious to hear these because I just love your brain around this whole topic. If money is just a tool, what would you say it's ultimately meant to help us build?
Legacy.
And can we talk about legacy? Because when people think about legacy, they only think about themselves after they die and what gets left behind. Is that your wholesome view of legacy?
You can create a legacy while you're still alive.
Ooh.
Don't have to die for it to become a reality.
Yeah.
As long as it's impactful, as long as it's far reaching into future generations, guess what? Your legacy is already bearing fruit.
Oh, if money is just a tool, it's ultimately meant to help us build legacy. Oh, I love that. I love it. Okay.
Thank you.
If someone is listening right now, actually, there are people listening right now. Imagine if they're feeling discouraged, they're overwhelmed by debt or even regret. What would you say to that person right now?
We all make mistakes.
Yeah.
But we must not camp in them.
Yeah.
We must not anchor ourselves in them. But think of the lessons we can learn, dust ourselves, pick ourselves up, and move on. The Bible even says that the righteous man falls 7 times,
yes.
but he gets up every single time.
Oh, come
on. It's not unusual for you to go in, to get into trouble or to make mistakes.
Mm.
It's to be embraced, grow from it, and become a better person from it.
Yeah. To finish off our conversation, please complete the sentence. Financial freedom feels like.
Financial freedom feels like. Wow.
Hmm.
I would say financial freedom feels like owning the world.
Oh.
Because once you're financially free, the world is in your hands.
Oh. And we've seen the things that money can do.
Oh, yes, girl. The money answers all things.
The doors it opens. The conversations you don't even need to have because your checkbook already has them for you.
There we go.
Ah. Tsengai, let me tell you something about you. There are people who pride themselves with being sharpshooters. I am brutally honest. And I'm always like, you know, honesty doesn't need to be brutal. And you don't need to shoot sharply at me. You can just tell me the truth with love and conviction, but tell me the truth nonetheless. And you're that person, you know, even as I knew that I'm talking to you today, I was just like, oh, we're about to hear the truth. But it comes packaged with so much grace, so much poise, so much truth, you know, like truth comes packaged in truth, because there are some truths that are just there to make us feel good about ourselves. But your truth is universal. It is direct, but it doesn't hurt. And that is why we love having you on here. Thank you so much for unpacking this conversation with me, for going to the minds and the hearts of people who have to make these decisions around investing and paying off debt. You've given us tools to think through how we can actually tackle the mountain of debt that looks so big in front of us. But you've actually also said, listen, there are many ways to do this thing right, but just choose the one that is easy in the beginning and will work for you and where you're trying to go. Thank you so much for having this chat with me.
Thank you so much, and have a lovely evening
you further. You too. I'm not going to say like bye-bye, because at some point we're going to have you again. That's how, just how much we love you. But bye for now.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Bye, it's okay.
Bye.
Whew. If you're anything like me, you're walking away from this conversation with both conviction and clarity. Because what we've learned today is this: paying off debt is an act of self-respect. Investing is an act of self-trust. And understanding your money patterns, well, that is an act of self-awareness. And honestly, we need all three. We can't just do one and forget the other two. We don't just need a budget, not just a saving plan, but a relationship with money, a relationship that's rooted in healing and not fear, because nothing good comes out of fear, and one that is rooted in strategy and not shame. So if you've ever stood in front of a till with your phone in your hand, with your bank app open, wondering whether you should spend, whether you should save, invest, or just disappear, I want you to remember this. You are not behind. You are not broken. You are not the sum of your financial mistakes, however many you've made. You are powerful, okay? And you are very much capable. And starting right now, not next month, okay? Not next year. As soon as you're done listening to this, I believe you can begin to build a kind of financial future that reflects the whole you. One that is healed, one that is now intentional, and the one that is in control. So whether you decide to crush your debt, to plant your investment seeds, or let's be honest, just treat yourself to a soft life Sunday with limits, of course. Just make it a choice, not a coping mechanism, okay? Your money should serve your vision and not your impulses. And your wealth journey is definitely not a race. just move according to its rhythm. All right. I want to still say thank you to our incredible Tsungai, and not just for schooling us, you know, but for seeing us, you know, for reminding us that financial freedom doesn't start in your bank account. It starts in your belief system. Until next time, fam, I am Nompumele Lombonani, and I hope you've just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.